Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome to the Daily Jungle. What a weekend of football that was. Starting with that butter knife fight between the Jags and the Bills. Also, the Rams punked by the Falcons. The Chiefs melting down again in the second half against the Titans. And the Saints beating the Panthers for the third time this season. We broke it all down and previewed tonight's championship game between Alabama and Georgia. Three excellent guests as well. Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network broke down the weekend. Cam Jordan of the Saints joined me after his monster performance against the Panthers. And SI's Andy Staples broke down tonight's title game and cookie dough in a cup. Alvy, let's get this thing rolling. The Daily Jungle gets started right now. Great NFL wildcard weekend. You had Chiefs and Titans. So many storylines in that game. Falcons, Rams had the defending conference champs going up against the exciting new blood here in SoCal. You had Panthers and Saints, and that was a trilogy matchup between a couple of divisional rivals. But can we go ahead and be real? Let's be real. The most anticipated game of the weekend was Buffalo at Jacksonville. It wasn't only the most anticipated game of the weekend. That may have been the most anticipated game of this season because that was the game that nobody saw coming in September and the game that everybody wanted to see in January. As long as we're being straight, the Super Bowl is going to have a hard time living up to the excitement of the Bills Mafia bringing their tables and their kegs down to Florida for Buffalo's first playoff game in about two decades. And I wish I could tell you that that game itself lived up to all the hype, but of course it didn't. Unless you like a couple of defenses, just standing there and trading haymakers and a pair of offenses trying to figure out exactly what the hell was happening. Blake Bortles and Tyrod Taylor were matching each other crappy drive for crappy drive. About the only thing that either team had working on offense was LeSean McCoy, who battled like a stud for 119 yards from scrimmage on that bad wheel. I mean, that was a macho performance. This guy absolutely laid it on the line. And speaking of Bills running backs, let me just go ahead and take a moment to acknowledge something that I'm aware of. I'm aware that there were photos circulating of some former Bill wearing a Bills jersey and posing with Bills fans. I'm aware of this. I just don't care. As always, just because I haven't said anything about that does not mean that I don't know about that. It doesn't mean that I need you telling me all about that. I haven't said anything because it's not relevant. I haven't said anything about this because I don't care about this guy. And I haven't since he got away with butchering those two people in cold blood. I'm aware that he was with Bills fans. I just don't care. Keep moving. Oh, I know. I don't care. So, while the first half of yesterday's clash of the Titans did not live up to the hype, let me tell you something. The final minutes of that game very nearly did. Down 10-3. The Bills get the ball back on their 37. 1:51 left in the game. 63 yards separating them from a tie game. You find the magic here. They could advance. But on third down, Tyrod Taylor scrambles. He takes an enormous shot. He has his head bounce off the ground. A nasty moment and one that ended his day and probably ended his career in Buffalo. Then what? Then Nathan Peterman comes in. And for a moment, it looked like we were going to have Peter Mania. Could you have imagined this guy coming off the bench on 4th-and-3 and leading that team to tie the game and then ultimately win it? For a moment, I actually thought that was possible because with everybody covered, Pete tucks it and he runs. Well, I mean, running is probably a stretch. More like he lumbered. But he picks up that first down, and the Bills were back in business. Then he hits Deontay Thompson for 14 yards, and then suddenly everybody in Bills gear is amped, and rightfully so. I mean, again, how amazing would that have been for Peterman to lead this team to a game-tying score? Tie that game, and you're probably going to rip that game. Rip that game, and then there's no doubt you're going to beat the Pats and the Steelers, and then you're in Minnesota for the Super Bowl. Do you believe in miracles? For a moment, a lot of us did. And then he threw the game-ending pick. Game over. Thanks for coming.
Peterman drops the throw, throws it out to the right side. It is knocked and picked off by Jalen Ramsey. He tipped it in the air. He made a diving interception, and it's the Jaguars football at midfield.
That is one of the most incredible athletic interceptions I have ever seen. And Jalen Ramsey, no surprise that he's the one that does it.
Jags radio right there, and that's just Jalen Ramsey doing Jalen Ramsey things. All right, Bills fans, couple of thoughts here regarding the play calling for that game. I mean, easy for me to say, and nobody likes a Monday morning quarterback, but first and goal from the one in the second quarter, give the freaking ball to Shady. If LeSean McCoy is your running back and Tyrod Taylor is your quarterback, why are you calling a pass on first and goal from the one? Is there any surprise that they were called for offensive PI on that first play and they lost their only shot at a touchdown for the entire day because of that? Listen, I'm not saying that Tyrod Taylor is the guy there. He's not, which I'll get to in a minute. But he didn't get a hell of a lot of help, did he? Not from his receivers who kept putting it on the ground and not from the play calling either. Calling for a pass on first and goal from the one when you have Shady is unfathomable. Of course that came back to bite them in the ass. Of course. Now, as for you getting screwed by the refs on that Jalen Ramsey INT that ended the game, Bills Mafia, I could see why you might feel that way. I could see why you might want that overturned. And believe me, I want to see more Nate Peterman as much as the next guy. But there really was not enough to overturn. It was not conclusive enough. Not in that situation. And more to the point, that's not the reason you lost that game. A bigger reason you lost that game was the play of your quarterback, Tyrod Taylor. I'm not going to hang it all on him. It's far from all his fault. But how the hell do you lose a playoff game when you limit the opposing quarterback to 87 yards passing? In part, because your own quarterback is not that much better than the guy who threw for those 87. Now, you can argue that Thomas is better than Bortles, and you might be right. But the Bills can do better than Tyrod, and there's really no arguing that point. Hey, Bills fan, it was great. It was a great run. It was great to see you back in the playoffs, finally, but you can't say that you got jammed because you didn't, and you can't say that you didn't have your chances because you did. Ian Rappaport is my guest. Ian, so good to have you back. How are you? What's up?
What's going on? How are you, man?
Good, good. Ian, how about you? How are you holding up?
I'm okay. Coaching search in full swing, although probably not as not as crazy as years past. Still playoffs going on. I'm hanging in there.
It's good. It's all good. In fact, why don't we talk about the coaching carousel right now. Before we get into the games, Bill Belichick did tell reporters this morning that he, quote, absolutely plans to coach the Patriots next season. I mean, does that surprise you at all?
No. That was my understanding. And, you know, all of this stuff that has come out, I mean, there's a lot of it that's true. There's definitely some tension there. It was definitely a hard year. And, you know, the fact that the Brady trainer situation happened the same year that the Jimmy Garoppolo trade happened, I mean, it just leads to some very important, very successful people having some very hard conversations.
Ian Rappaport, yeah.
So that's all fine and sort of expected. To me, this has never been something that would threaten them. It's just something that some complicated people who have a great working relationship would have to work through.
All right, so he says absolutely he'll be back, and that really is no surprise. What about his coordinators? How likely is it, for instance, that offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels and defensive coordinator Matt Patricia are back next season as well?
I would say, from my understanding, not very likely that either are back. You know, Patricia has a really good shot at the Detroit Lions job. You know, nothing can be official. They're still in the playoffs, but, you know, that's one that I think they've known for a while that that's the guy they want to go after. You know, I'm not exactly sure how the interview went there, but I would imagine, you know, Bob Quinn, the GM, and Matt Patricia know each other pretty well from New England. I would think Patricia has a really good shot at that one, and the Giants too, by the way. And then you have Josh McDaniels. You know, he's deep in the mix for the Colts and the Giants. I would think that he gets one of those. So, yeah, I mean, either way, Bill Belichick will be back next year, but his staff is going to look very different.
Clones, give me a moment so I can talk to you about Stamps.com. Now, here's a New Year's resolution that you can actually keep. Add Stamps.com to your business and save a ton of time and money this year. Now, I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't need that resolution this year because I've already done it, and I wish I had done it sooner. Stamps.com has saved me so much time and so much money. You see, Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your computer. Stamps.com is the better way to get postage. You simply use your computer to to print U.S. postage for any letter or package, any class of mail, and you let the mailman pick it up. You don't leave your office. There's no more lugging mail to the post office. There is no more hassle. So Stamps.com saves you time and money. Almost everything you can do at the post office, you can do right from your desk. Stamps.com. Convenient, easy, reliable, efficient. And those are all the reasons why I use Stamps.com. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Are you ready for a happier new year? Then go to Stamps.com. Hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com. Enter jungle. Once again, to take advantage of this great offer, Stamps.com. Enter jungle. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to our daily jungle. NFL Network national insider Ian Rappaport, my guest. You can follow him at Rapsheet. Ian, breaking news this morning, the Bears announced that Matt Nagy is their new head coach. So how do you like that fit for him, and in particular for Mitchell Trubisky?
Like it a lot for him. This is, you know, it's a good job. First of all, it's a job. It is very hard to get a head coaching job. This was the first year that Nagy was really on the radar as far as a top coaching candidate. And, you know, the fact that Andy Reid turned play calling over to him and it ended up bolstering their playoff bid, that's very good for him. You know, he has been considered one of the top quarterback guys up and coming. Doug Peterson's success helped. This is very good for him. For the Bears, I think it's good too. You know, they wanted not John Fox, and they definitely got not John Fox. He's young. He's offensive. He works with the quarterback. He's an easygoing, pretty good dude. He is definitely not John Fox. And they have a young GM. They have a young team. They think they're going in the right direction. So I kind of like it for the Bears.
Let's talk some more about Kansas City. The Titans come back on KC. Their season's now over. Is it also officially then the end of Alex Smith's time with the Chiefs?
Yeah, it looks like it to me. And they're, you know, they're definitely going to have some options, no doubt about it. But, you know, they will take trade calls. They will make trade calls probably, and they will get a lot of interest. I mean, he was number one in the NFL in passer rating, and they have a quarterback who they think is going to be better. And he's making $17 million next year, which is not a lot for a quarterback, certainly not now. So I would be curious to see whether they can do better than the two twos they eventually gave up for him in one of the best trades we've seen in recent memory. I mean, I think he's probably going to be gone, and Patrick Mahomes will step to the spotlight next year.
That's so interesting, right? I mean, the guy did throw for 4,000 yards, 26 touchdowns. He had 5 picks, and as you point out, he led the league in quarterback rating. So, you know, there are plenty of teams that could use a quarterback like that. You know, I'm curious. It would seem that Jacksonville might be on that list of teams that could use a starting quarterback, especially after watching Blake Bortles yesterday. How likely is it then that Bortles is back as their starter?
I think it's kind of likely. You know, I would say that is the expectation. I mean, he's making $19 million next year, which is a lot, but probably for the quarterbacks who've had second deals, that's probably in the middle. He is not terrible. He knows the system. The teammates like him. And this is a defense and run the ball team. So as long as he doesn't get you killed, you can win with Blake Bortles. And I know that because they did it yesterday. They basically told him, please do not lose it. And he did not lose it. So the only problem with the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I'll say the same as I always do for every quarterback, if you're going to replace him, you better know you have somebody better. And the problem is, I don't know that they're going to know they have somebody better, you know, by the time they have to guarantee that $19 million fifth-year option.
Wouldn't we know already, though, that Alex Smith is definitely better than Blake Bortles?
Yes, I would say that is probably true. I just don't get the money. If you're going to trade for Alex Smith, you're going to do so giving him a contract extension, right? Because he's not, you know, he's not going to accept a trade for a team where he has just 1 year left on his contract. Money's not guaranteed. He's going to want an extension. You're going to give him an extension if you're trading for him. I don't get the sense that they are going to be in the high-priced quarterback market. Like maybe Alex Smith would make sense, but you got to give up picks. And you got to give him a contract extension, and you got to make sure you cut Blake Bortles. It's just, it's a lot for me to see the Jaguars doing that. You know, I mean, they could do it, but I feel like they'd rather draft some.
Ian Rappaport joining us. Ian, let me ask you about Cam Newton, and you saw what happened to him yesterday. I need your reaction. When you saw him take that shot late in yesterday's game and then get up and try and get off the field and then fall to the turf, what did you make of that whole thing?
I understand it better now than I did before. And, you know, I've talked to a couple of quarterbacks today. I hadn't really thought of the quarterback needs to warm up part of it. You know, what the Panthers are saying is basically that when a quarterback goes down, he's sort of instructed, stay down on the field so it takes more time so the backup, Derek Anderson in this case, can warm up. I hadn't thought about that. But that's what they're saying. They're saying that he got poked. The helmet came down over the eyes, and I guess he got poked in the eye. And he basically crouched down instead of staggering down. NFL's going to look into it and talk to the Panthers medical staff, but that is my understanding of the situation.
Hmm. So how do you think the league responds to that?
You know, they're going to look into it, but I would have a hard time seeing that, you know, imagining them seeing that there was wrongdoing in the situation.
And before you go, what about the Bills? Go back to that for 1 minute. Is it a foregone conclusion also that Tyrod Taylor will not be back with them next season? How do you think that situation plays out?
Much better chance that Tyrod Taylor will not be back than Blake Bortles will not be back. Now, they owe him a $6 million roster bonus on the third day of the league year. My guess right now is they pick it up and then trade him. You know, so basically, they pay him $6 million, take that off the hook from whatever team is trading for him, and then trade him somewhere. You know, you can – it's a quarterback who has started, who's a good person, who took his team to the playoffs. There is value there from some team that's going to need a bridge starter to sign a rookie or to draft, you know, when they draft a rookie. So my guess right now is that he's not playing with the Bills, but that they trade him somewhere.
Hmm. One final thought. What about the Giants? They're continuing to interview candidates for their head coaching position. How is that process proceeding? And has anybody emerged as the favorite there?
Well, it's been tough to get a favorite there, but I would keep an eye on Steve Wilks. The Panthers defensive coordinator interviews there likely tomorrow. They have the Arizona Cardinals coming up. So the Cardinals like Wilkes, really like Wilkes, and they could try to close out the deal. Do the Giants, knowing that, having Dave Gettleman, who had Steve Wilkes in Carolina, do they just keep him there? Do they just say, all right, like, we're just going to make sure this guy doesn't interview anyone else? That's kind of the dynamic I'm looking forward to seeing tomorrow.
You know, it seems like Ron Rivera, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like he's kind of resigned to the fact that Wilkes is going to end up being a head coach somewhere next season. If, for instance, yeah, it's in New York, for Giants fans that are not really familiar with Wilkes, what's he like as a coach and as a leader?
Great defensive coach. You know, has waited forever to be a defensive coordinator for whatever reason. Was blocked a couple times. I believe he was blocked in San Diego when he first wanted him to come over. And so he's a great defensive coach, and all that is good. But he is a much better leader. You know, this is the guy when Rivera steps away or has to deal with personal issues. I mean, this guy runs the team. He is dynamic. He's a great guy. If you ever interview him, you will know he is an all-time great guy. But he's not soft on the players. He's pretty hard on them. They know that, and they respect him. And this is a, you know, I think Ben McAdoo, when the Giants made the hire, I thought it was a good hire, took him to the playoffs in year one. This guy seems to be a better leader than McAdoo was. And it looks like that's a direction the Giants are trying to get better at.
Cameron Jordan is my guest. Cameron, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good. That was a hell of an intro.
Cam, you've had a hell of a year, my man. You've had a really nice career, in fact. So I said it would take me a moment or so. Listen, I really appreciate you the day after a game like that. But let me first start with Victory Mondays. Always got to feel good. But how much better does it feel when it's a playoff Victory Monday, and especially after a huge showing by the defense and by you personally?
I mean, when we talk about a Victory Monday being, you know, you usually take that day off. We were in at 9 o'clock watching film. I mean, we try to, you know, get beyond this Carolina game. I mean, we had corrections we made on defense, and we just wanted to get on this Vikings film. So now, you know, normally you take a 24-hour rule. I don't even want that. You know, I'm glad we took 12. But honestly, you know, we're on to the Vikings. We know we didn't play well enough the first time we played them, and now we're going to have a chance at redemption.
Saints defensive end Cameron Jordan, my guest. All right, so with respect to that, I get that you've turned the page. But before I let you fully turn the page, I've got to ask you about the atmosphere in the Superdome. I mean, it's always bumping. But if you take me back to Carolina's final possession where the defense got after Cam Newton, forced two incompletions, your intentional grounding, and then the sack for you and Von Bell to finish that game off. I mean, what was the atmosphere and the energy like in that building with the game on the line?
I mean, it was breathtaking, honestly. I mean, how loud that stadium got. Bumping and rocking just don't do it justice. When you talk about the energy that was just overflowing on the field, how much the crowd affected that game. That's what we call dome field advantage.
Cam Jordan joining us. Dome field advantage. Now, it's nearly impossible, or so it said, to beat a team three times in one season. After the game, you said you were going to send Cam Newton a bottle of wine to celebrate. So when you're sending a gift to an opposing quarterback that you beat three times in a season, do you go red or do you go white? Or maybe, given that guy, do you go something even stronger?
You know, I had a nice bottle of Jordan wine from us, a cab, Alexander County, you know, Sonoma Valley. Bottle. You know, I just feel like I had a, you know, a partake in that name, that namesake, you know, send him some good stuff.
You know it. You know it. And then your line about sending him a bottle of wine I thought was great, but I got to be fair. I got to be straight. Not as good as the conversation about the other Khalil brother, as you point out. So you're going up against the other Khalil brother, and instead of going with his first name, you said, let's just call him Speed Bump McGee. I mean, Speed Bump McGee is an amazing line. I know you've used it for a while, but I got to ask you, is an offensive lineman a challenge or just something to get over on your way to a quarterback? And give me your thoughts on Speed Bump McGee in this case.
I mean, both. When you talk about an offensive lineman, I mean, a defensive end directive is to, you know, harass the quarterback, to make the most noise in the backfield. And along that line, of course, you have your offensive line, your protectors. And as annoying as they are, you know, some are truly talented and great athletes. But this guy, you know, this guy was along with, you know, the extra pushes and shoves after the whistle. I'm not going to lie, I got probably over-passionate about trying to defeat him, which I guess it means he was doing his job at some efficient level. But, you know, spoils of war clearly dictates that I was the better of the opposing forces.
You were the better of the opposing forces, and I know you understand your directive. Hey, do these guys, I mean, obviously it's their job to get under your skin, maybe try to get into your head, to annoy you. Have you ever gotten hooked by one? Like it worked. They got over. They got in my head. They got under my skin. He took me out of my game. When was the last time in your career that happened with an offensive lineman? Ever?
You can't let that happen. No. I mean, if anything, you just got to let the fuel rage, that rage fuel you through the game. I mean, the more they hold, the more they do the, you know, the cheap, chippy stuff. You just got to let that passion really take over and push that into more energy on the field. You know, being more active, being more, you know, turning that around and being even more of a pest to them. You know, so that's sort of where you get that final drive, you know, the final couple drives where it's like, you know, you're beating him relentlessly. You get a sack off of him, and then, you know, you can turn around, and that's where you answer back. So, you know, that's at the end of the day, I want to be his worst nightmare. I want him to go home and tell his older brother, you know, he was getting abused on the corner. And, you know, his brother can't do anything to protect him.
Cameron Jordan joining us. Listen, I laid out your whole resume to start the interview. You're a three-time Pro Bowler. You've had a number of great seasons in your NFL career. You and I have talked about this in the past. I would argue you have never had a better season than the one you're having right now. Would you agree? And if so, did something change for you this season, or did you just keep chopping and keep doing what you've always been doing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to continue to grow. I want to be better, you know, every year than the previous year. And we talk about, you know, the talent added on our defense. It's just that much more easier to ball and realize that you have, you know, animals on the left and the right of you and behind you. So anywhere I line up, I know that I can trust the players on the field.
You mentioned fuel. Let me ask you about fuel. Back in the summer, you tweeted, quote, "Guess I'm not in the top 10 of the NFL top 100 or the back 90. This upcoming season, you won't keep denying me NFL Network player voted." So how much did that snub motivate you? And now that you have backed it up, is there any part of you that wants to say, yeah, how do you like me now? What about right now?
I mean, right now, you know, I've been voted in at number 99 twice, so I'm just expecting a third time at this point. I mean, I'm not even, you know, I'm not looking for that justification. I do know when I take the field and, you know, halfway through the first quarter, the offensive lineman knows who I am, and that's what's important. By hopefully that the end of the first quarter, the quarterback will know who I am. The running back will fear who I am. And that's, you know, that's what a defensive end does. Now, at the end of the season, you know, will I be looking for accolades? Sure. But at this point in time, honestly, I just want to be able to affect the game in such a manner that they have to respect it.
Cam Jordan joining me for a couple of more moments. You know, you talked about your defense and what's on, knowing how important it is to have on both sides or what you have on both sides. Let me ask you about the other side of the ball, the offense. You've been around Drew Brees a long, long time. A lot of the media attention this season was directed at Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram. So what do you make of the way Drew Brees showed up yesterday?
I mean, yeah, we went to the halftime and it was, what, 21-9? I mean, those are statements. We wanted to we wanted to start out fast, and we did just that. I do think that, you know, he was playing a heck of a game. Even when the game almost got close, and that's something, you know, the defense addressed with ourselves about not ever letting a game get within reach. I think we ended up putting it away. And as much as our offense was balling, I think that it's even more of a confidence booster to put our defense out in that last final drive and be able to seal the win for us.
Listen, one last thought. You mentioned the Vikings. You've got them on Sunday. You opened up the season against them with a 29-19 loss, but Drew Brees said it felt like that game was 10 years ago. How different is this team now than the team that lost in week one? I'm talking about you guys.
I mean, you know, before that, we had Ken Crowley going from year one to year two, still really in that year one. Talk about Marshawn Lattimore, you know, just his first start. Then you talk about the abilities of, you know, our linebacker core. Everything on that defense has changed. Before that, we hadn't gone on an 8-game winning streak. Before that, you know, we hadn't had a detrimental win, like, you know, going over to London and beating Miami, beating Carolina the first time over at their place for our first winning season. You know, there's different things that we need to go through as a defense to be able to grow. And now sitting there, you know, we are the best versions of ourselves for this upcoming week, and we have to prove that.
Hey, Cam, one last thought. I just thought of this before I go. I mean, Sean Payton, my man is not afraid, right? I mean, he is a really aggressive play caller, a really aggressive head coach. When he's going for it, midfield, fourth down, five-point lead, as a defensive player, what went through your mind? What were you thinking?
He's got confidence in us, and he's got confidence in himself. Confidence that our offense can get that first down, and if not, we've got the ability on our defense to ride this one out. We're defending a touchdown, not a three-point situation.
Let's talk college football now. I mean, what's the best way to follow up a nice, nice wildcard weekend with a crystal chaser? Because somebody's going home with the crystal tonight. College football's national championship is on the line. You've got Alabama and you've got Georgia going to battle. And as we all know, it's an all-SEC affair. Now, before I get to the game, let me say this one more time. I've covered this already, but it bears repeating. I know that we have two SEC teams in the championship game. I've got no issue with that at all. I know the game is being played in the heart of SEC country. I've got no issue with that. However, SEC honk. Before you start flapping your gums about your conference dominance, before your first SEC chant takes hold, just know this. Just because Bama and Georgia are good, maybe even very good, maybe even dominant, that does not mean your entire conference is very good. And cheering for a conference is the biggest bag move a college football fan can make, especially when that conference went 2-5 in bowl games. Stop doing that. Stop homing for the conference. Now, in terms of the matchup itself, look, at this point, everybody knows Nick Saban's record against his former assistants. We all know this. Jimbo Fisher, Mark D'Antonio, Derek Dooley, Will Muschamp, the Shark Humper. Put them all together, and what do they all have in common? None of them have ever beaten Nicky. He is 11-0 against his former assistants. We all know that. But I'll also say this. None of them have ever had Nick Chubb and Sony Michel in the same backfield. None of them have ever had that dog defense. And none of those guys know Saban better than Kirby Smart. To me, Smart is the closest thing you're going to find to Nick Saban 2.0. He even got the red ass on the podium at the Rose Bowl, trying his best to get the confetti out because it was cutting into Kirby time. I mean, Bama linebacker Rashawn Evans said it himself, quote, "They're the same person. It's scary," end quote. And it's true. Smart was with Saban at LSU.
also at Miami. He spent time with him in Tuscaloosa. He won the Broyles Award under Saban as the nation's best assistant coach back in 09. He won another Assistant Coach of the Year Award in 2012. Saban made him the highest paid defensive coordinator in all of college football. So nobody knows Nick Saban better than Kirby Smart. All of that said, and he's a hell of a coach. He's done an amazing job already at Georgia. All of that said, he's still not Saban. He's still not Nick Saban. And to me, that's where it starts and that's where it ends. Listen, I'll be straight. I was less than enthused that Alabama even got that invite to the dance this year. But I also said at that time when they did, wouldn't it be the most Saban thing ever to get that invite, an invite that he may not have deserved, and then go and rip the title anyway just to spite us all. And I think he's going to. I think he will. I think it's going to be vintage Saban tonight. Physical football, pounding, and a game where a big play on defense or special teams is going to make the difference. Seems to me that month off transformed Alabama. They look like a different team. And it transformed them this way. It filled them with premium fuel. A month of having to listen to people doubt them and say that they didn't deserve to be there. Then what? They go out and they put that absolute hospital job on Clemson, and they're going to chase that with a W tonight. Again, this is not me knocking Georgia. I couldn't be more impressed with what Kirby Smart is building right there, but it's only the first coat of paint. And as good as Jake Fromm is, and can I tell you, this kid is special. This guy is special. One of the best freshmen I've ever seen. He is a special, special player, but still only a freshman. And then you've got Jalen Hurts. Hurts is going to have to make a few plays with his arm, something that he's struggled to do in the past in big moments. But if to me the biggest weakness that I can find on Bama is a starting quarterback who's 25-2 in his two seasons, was last year's SEC Offensive Player of the Year, was the MVP of the Sugar Bowl, and was 2 minutes and 7 seconds away from pulling off a come-from-behind game-winning drive in last year's national title game before Deshaun Watson put his cape on and ripped the crystal away. If that's the worst thing that I could say about Bama, they're going to be fine tonight. Georgia's day is coming, but to me, tonight is going to be about Alabama. The Tide win a brawl, they take home the championship, and Saban does what he does. Comes in at the last second, gets an invite that maybe he doesn't deserve, rips another title, runs down the bear, and everybody's pissed. And the championship stays in the SEC. All right, that's my pick. I like Bama in a brawl. All right, so as a byproduct of being on TV now, and a memo to all the station program directors who are thinking right now, oh, no, not again, Rome, really? Another week of this, Rome, really? No, definitely not. Definitely not. You have my word. Not another week of this. Maybe another month of that. No, definitely not another week of this. But let me reset something very quickly. Last week, when the show became a simulcast, and again, if you're not sure what we're talking about, the radio show, the Jim Rome radio show, is now on television. We are broadcasting live right now in a simulcast on CBS Sports Network. Because of that, last week, we had all sorts of callers that we normally would never have. And it all started with Ira Frady, one of the all-time great callers on the program, a guy who would never, ever call this show outside of a smack-off. I think that when he did, it opened up the floodgates, and then it motivated other great callers to call. So we're seeing things that we haven't seen in a long time, and I think in large part due to us being on TV. Why do I say that? Because I received an email that I'm about to read right now from somebody who I have not seen in a long time. In fact, not only a guy that I've not seen in a long time, but the only emailer on this program who has his own music bed. The only email that I will read with music underneath this email. He's the only guy. Now you tell me if you know this song. That sounds familiar, right? Beck, right? The song being Loser, right? So if I'm going to read an email over that song, it may seem to you that I'm calling that emailer a loser, right? Pretty harsh. I mean, I'm not wired like that. That's not what I do. That's not who I am. But that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm calling this guy a loser. Now, hear me out. Hear me out before you get all fired up on that. The reason I'm calling this guy a loser, Eric in Falls Church, because Eric is this weird cat. They would always email the program, and the email was always terrible, added nothing to the show, but then he'd always tag it with things like war, me, and Rome, insert whatever. You know, war, me, and Rome, killing it in Vegas together. War, me, and Rome, going here together, war. I mean, you'll get an idea. Anyway, when you hear this song, this is the only reason you would ever hear this song on this show. Know that there's an Eric in Falls Church email to go with it. And I would imagine the only reason this guy's back is because now we're on TV. Let's find out. Dear Jim, in honor of me emailing your radio show, which is now also a TV show, I have several requests since I can now see you reading my emails. Let me stop right there. Once again, us coming to TV is the best and worst thing ever because it brings out people like this. It's the best thing ever when it brings out Brad and Corona and I, Afraidy. The worst thing ever when a guy like Eric in Falls Church says, now I can see you reading my content. He goes on, please have CBS buy a silver plate that Austin can use to transport my email from the printer into the studio and then into your hands. A silver plate. You mean like a platter, Eric? Then he goes on, quote, before reading my email, please stand. Once the reading of my email is concluded, please neatly fold it into two creases and put it into your pocket so that you may review it later. You may then sit and review the genius of my email. Feel free to take callers if you like discussing my great email. Thank you. Eric in Falls Church. Now, remember what I said. I said generally this guy would send an email and the email was always horrible. It was always about the wars that tagged that horrible email. War me being the only clone to get a shout out on one of Rome's TV shows. What's that even mean? I shout out to clones on all my TV shows. War Rome holding up a fist right now so I can fist pound the TV screen. War Rome proving he is wearing pants underneath the desk. Let me tell you something, loser. I got nothing to prove to you, Eric. So you can stop right there. Like I said, this TV simulcast is both the best and worst thing that's ever happened to me in the radio show. Because it's bringing out people like that. He's back. He did get a shout out way back in the day. He did get a shout out way back on a prior TV show that I used to do.
I want to thank Jana White, Drew Sharp, and a special shout out to Eric in Falls Church. Thank you for tuning in.
Bro, you still living off that? I mean, what was that, like 10 years ago? You're still walking around, hey, yo, Rome. Rome shouted me out once. Rome mentioned me on his TV show. I'm talking about Danica from Jacksonville, the queen. Danica, good morning. What's going on? How are you?
It's Victory Monday, Rome. It is Victory Monday. Now, being the queen that I am, I didn't get to have any of the teal beer or the teal food because your girl got upgraded to the Terror Suites, okay? I was sipping on champagne, eating crab legs, you know, oysters, rubbing elbows with Josh Scobie and David Garrard. So didn't get to have any of that, the radioactive food, but that's okay. But granted, that game was pretty much ugly. Anybody probably watching at home, you probably fell asleep. But there in person, it was rocking, okay? And I don't know what Bills Mafia thought they were going to do. Oh, we're going to come take over your town. We took over this place. We took over that place. You took over a place that we don't go. Enjoy your food poisoning. You came and trashed a parking lot and set it on fire where JFRD had to come out there and put it out. That's a toxic wasteland anyway, so enjoy your lopsided children that you probably have 9 months from now, okay? And when you came down here and you checked your baggage of your folding table and those ugly pants you were wearing, you forgot to bring your offense. You get down to the one and you pull a play out of the Seattle playbook. Instead of running it, you throw it. And who do you throw against? Jalen Ramsey, who later on just sucked the life out of you, just took the heart, like, Kalima, Kalima. It was over. No matter if it was caught or not, it was over. You forgot. Yeah, we got Blake Bortles. We know what he is. He's trash, but he is our trash, okay? So, Bills Mafia, have a nice trip home. Thanks for playing. We will be in the playoffs next week.
Let me jump in on you, Danica. There you go. The queen is in. She cut the line, and understandably so. How about a telephone call to wrap hour number one? Let's see. Let's go to Nashville. My man, Bo. Bo in Nashville. Bo,
what's up, man?
What's up? How you doing, Bo?
I'm cool, man. Look, this is my first time calling in 18, man, so I'm trying to bring the love, man. My man, Alvin, he wanted me to come in and go with somebody because he know how I get down just like you do. So by me wanting to bring in the love, I'm going to take a deep breath on Eric. Eric, man, you just got spared because I'm trying to bring the love. But, Rome, I ain't going to take up too much of your time, man. I want to talk about my man, Trapper. I heard him call a few times, man, and it's like before the New Year's was out. I really didn't know, you know, he was going through what he was going through, man. And it's like that cancer thing hit home with me. My pops died of pancreatic cancer a few years ago. And I really didn't know my man had cancer because whenever he come on, man, he bring it. He bring it. I mean, he on the Mount Rushmore callers for me. And I just want to let him know, man, it's like after he said what he said before the year was out, I pulled over, said a little prayer for him, man. And I said a prayer for him today before your show came on, Rome. And it's like, I want him to know, man, cancer's not undefeated, man. So I want all the people in the jungle, all the clones, to take time out, 30 seconds or more, and say a prayer for my man Trapper, man. That's for me. Not only for me, for him, man, because it's like prayer changes things. And, man, Trap, I just want you to know, man, look, when you got difficult times and when you sometimes don't want to push, man, keep pushing and keep fighting, man, because I'm riding with you, bro.
Bo, let me jump in. Let me jump in real quick, Bo. I appreciate you very much, Bo. You know that. You're my man. I appreciate you. Listen, that may seem like a really heavy call, and come on, Rome, we're talking football. The thing about that is the number one topic on this show typically is the show. Aaron in Diamond Head. Aaron, good to have you on. What's up? How are you?
Hey, what's going on, man? Thanks for the vine. Also, Jim, I want to say, man, thanks. That's a big, huge thanks letting Cam Jordan come in on short notice and giving us some jungle karma going into this week. You did mention that we did lose to the Vikings week one, but this is a totally different team, Jim. We didn't have both of our starting cornerbacks in week one, and we can all agree that Marshawn Lattimore is going to lock up one of those wide receivers. I look for the Saints to win this week real big with pick your poison, either Breeze or the duo backfield. And that's all I got to say, man. One more thing. Cam Newton, he got folded up like a table at a Bills tailgating party. That dude was not poked in the eye. He wears a shield. Come on now. The NFL really needs to look into this. He got his ass folded up. I'm out.
Aaron and Diamondhead, there's your first rat call on this Monday. He got his ass folded up like a folding table. That he didn't get poked in his eye, he wears a shield. There you have it, clones. Week two of the simulcast is off to the right start. Get yourself ready for tonight's natty, and then we come right back here tomorrow to talk about it. See you then. I'm out.